kept away from it. I'm going to try and say a few words about water and ice. Ice, because I think it's useful to talk about ice, because I think it illustrates some of the interesting bits of water, which can then go into trying to understand water itself. What's so special about water? There tends to be a feeling around the place that it's magic for some reason. I'm going to try to explain to you, it's really quite straightforward. Why does it behave the way it does? Why does it have these anomalous properties? And again, I think I'll try and explain those in what I think is a relatively simple way, but actually quite an absolutely valid way. And why is it central to life on Earth? Well, we can talk about that until the cows come home, and we can perhaps raise it in the discussion. But the answer to why water is interesting and why it has the properties it has is very, very simple. It's all in the nature of the molecule itself. So what is the molecule? Well, it's a molecule. It has all sorts of different ways people represent it, all sorts of Mickey Mouse ways of representing a water molecule. And I'm going to use the ultimate Mickey Mouse model of a water molecule. So I'm going to start with the gentleman himself. And I'm going to say I've got some hydrogen atoms at his ears. And in his mouth and the back of his neck, there are some bits of extra negative charge, which technically they're called lone pair electrons. Don't worry about it. All you need to know is the hydrogens are positive, and there's some bit of negative charge around here. We can convert that into something the chemists might be a bit happier with. One heavy atom, the oxygen, and two light atoms, the hydrogens. I won't emphasize why that's important, but it does actually have some important effects, some important quantum properties which are relevant to some of its properties, but we won't worry about those at the moment. This is a bit of a technical slide just to show you the angles we're talking about. The molecule itself, the angle between the hydrogen, oxygen, and hydrogen is 105 degrees, which is very close to two important angles, the tetrahedral angle and the angle of internal angle of a pentagon, which you may recognize as we move through the evening. Just to underline, it isn't really ball and sticks. It's a set of electron clouds and a few nuclei around the place. And where those charges are is important to how that molecule interacts with other molecules of water and other molecules of other things. This is a classical model, again, of the charge distribution of the water molecule. If you like, this is Mickey Mouse on his head. Here's his ears, slight positive charges and slight negative charges, which originally used to be separated. We no longer believe they are. But this whole idea of these four areas of charge, two positives and two negatives, is the key to quite a straightforward understanding of the way this molecule behaves. So we bring two of them together, and as you know, like charges repel and unlike charges attract. So you might expect the positive bits to start attracting the negative bits. And in this case here, you see that's actually what is happening. I got the positive bits on the hydrogen, and the negative bits on the oxygen, the back end of the oxygen. So we can build that up into a bigger system by looking at that molecule and saying, well, okay, I've got these two molecules. The hydrogen can interact here, and we say it donates a hydrogen bond, particular kind of interaction we're talking about. And so each molecule can accept two molecules interacting through the hydrogens and two molecules interacting through its own hydrogen. Now, we do this, these are other water molecules. Here's my central water molecule, two hydrogens and two back end negative bits. And I can just do what I've shown there by plugging these things on. And I end up by having a very simple tetrahedral motif. I said this angle is close to 105 degrees, close to the tetrahedral angle. And so I end up here with a central water molecule and four neighbours distributed in this sort of tetrahedral angle.
Did you shed in the other room?
I'm
sorry.
Keep it for the moment, okay? And so, this, or if you like, at least this four coordinated means four neighbored motif, where I've got a central water molecule surrounded by four others interacting in this tetrahedral sort of way. And Let's put a human face on that. Let's go away from the water molecules. This is quite a nice way to think about it. Just a bloke, well, an asexual bloke, with two hands and 2 feet. And the only way he's allowed to interact with neighbours is by a hand grabbing a foot, or a foot, somebody else's hand grabbing your foot. And you can see how that can build up. I should say thanks to Phil Ball, who thought of this. Phil Ball, the ex-Nature editor, who's now written an awful lot of splendid stuff. There's your tetrahedron motif of these five blokes having fun. And we can build that on that sort of thing. And I'm going to go through some bits about ice now, because I'm going to try and build some structures of ice. I'm going to go through ice first, because I think it demonstrates something quite interesting, which is relevant to the water problem later on. I'm going to try and connect together these water molecules in such a way to form an ice structure. And the ice structure has to be of the right volume, experimentally, at the right pressure, and also has to be a crystal, which means it has to have a repeating pattern ad nauseam. And it's really not much more than taking this motif that I've passed around here and playing three-dimensional jigsaws. And when I do that, then I end up with a model like this, which is the ice in your freezer or the ice on your ski slopes. And I've only got one. You've got the tetrahedral one, so you have to wait for this one. You might like to look at this and pass it around. You'll see that this tetrahedral motif is everywhere. It's everything. Every water molecule is surrounded by four neighbours. And it's also a very open structure. There are big holes in it. It's of a very low density. I could, in theory, fix and put another molecule in there just about. But it doesn't go in there under these conditions. So if you look at that, it's got a nice hexagonal pattern. You know, most snowflakes have got a hexagonal symmetry. It's got big holes. So if you want to have a look at that and pass it around. That's what it looks like. Taking your hands and feet job again. It's a fully coordinated structure, as you've said, and it's a very open structure. And the angles between the bonds are essentially the tetrahedral angle, which is consistent with the water molecule angle itself almost. Now, there's an awful lot of phases of ice. This is called a phase diagram, and it's a plot of temperature against pressure. You see here's our 0 degrees centigrade, and there's a line there which tells me that at atmospheric pressure, ice melts at 0 degrees. Above there I go into the liquid, below there I'm in this phase of ice called 1H. 1 because it's the first one we found, and H because it's hexagonal. But as I increase the pressure, if I take it down to say minus 50, and increase the pressure, then I end up by going into different ice phases. I'm compressing that structure, and at some point, it has to find some other way. It finds it's no longer stable in this organisation that's been passed around, and it has to reorganise itself to occupy the volume it's been forced to occupy, the reduced volume it's been forced to occupy by the additional pressure. And I'm going to show you how the water molecules do that. And I'm going to start off with ice 2, which is, you can see ice 2, if you're going from ice 1, it's just to the right there, and ice 2, which is in here. In fact, I think my next OS got it sort of lined out in blue. Well, these are structures. We know all these structures after quite a lot of work. I'm looking at this structure here. And if you look at that, again, this is Phil's way of doing it. It's not really quite. It's a two-dimensional analogue, but you can see what's actually happening. I've still got some open rings, but some of these rings that you see in this 1H structure here have been reduced to smaller rings. So the whole structure is having to find a way of satisfying its bonding constraints but by occupying a smaller volume. And it can do that quite happily, still having a four-coordinated structure, but with a bit of bond bending, and some smaller rings than those six-fold rings you find in the ICE-1 model. Let's take that a bit further, because water's quite crafty. I'm going to this phase ICE-4, which I'm particularly fond of, because it's very difficult to make. Now, I've got ICE-2, and I'm squashing it even more. So the water model has got to find some other way of organising themselves to take up less volume and still maintain this local neighbour structure. And it's very crafty. It does it by ending up having water molecule bonds spreading through some of those rings. Can you see that one over there?
Yeah.
Some bonds spread through the rings. So it's being forced to occupy less volume, and it finds that one way of actually doing it. And we can go to an even higher pressure. I'm going to go here to ICE-8, which is another favourite because we sorted the structure of that out about 20 years ago. And this is doing this interpenetration with a vengeance. You end up with a similar structure to the one that's going around, though not quite the same structure, but one in which you'll find that there's another lattice of the same kind which is interpenetrating the other lattice. And in the two-dimensional analog, you can see, well, it just means that people are sort of treading, going over into the empty space. And this essentially fills all the empty space, and it's a close-spec structure. So really, what I want to bring from this is that in all these structures, we've maintained that local structure of four coordination. There are varying degrees of distortion in the angles and the distances as we increase the pressure on the system and force it to occupy less volume. But it illustrates that this motif is highly versatile in forming structures. On that slide there, you'll find there were 12 phases of ICE. There are actually 17 known phases at the moment. All illustrative of the fact that, in fact, it's a very, very versatile building unit, if you like, a building brick of a shape which can form all sorts of structures. And I've shown two others here. This is ICE-12, which is a structure we found about 15 years ago. And the same occurs for things called gas hydrates, which are, if you like, gas molecules surrounded by a cage of water molecules, the kind of stuff that clogs up gas pipes as you're taking gas out of the ground. So it's a highly versatile building unit. Okay, so let's move on to look a bit about liquid water. Okay. And I'm going to, again, play the three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle game again. But with a difference. When we were talking about ices, we were talking about crystals. Crystals are ordered structures, repeating units. We tried to connect together the water molecules in such a way that's consistent with the way we know the water wants to interact with other water molecules. It gives me a crystal lattice, and it occupies a given volume. Now, if I'm doing the same for liquid water, I'm taking away one of those constraints. I'm taking away the lattice constraint, because a liquid is not a crystal. Although some of the early theories of liquids were based upon distorted crystals, and they're all wrong. So before I do that, let me try and illustrate this difference between a liquid and a crystal in a simpler system, and then try and build that back into the water system. This is taken from my old PhD work. This is a crystal of hard spheres, of steel balls. And you can see it's a regular repeating structure. It's a regular pile of spheres. It's a crystal. This is a heap. It's irregular. There is no crystallinity in that heap, but it's still quite a densely packed structure. So this summarizes in this simple spherical molecular system, the distance between a crystal, which is ordered like that, and a liquid, which is disordered, doesn't have any crystallinity about it. So now I want to try and build these guys into a model which is more like that than that, that doesn't have any regular repeating patterns in it. And, of course, I can do that. And you guys haven't had the crystal yet, have you? Let's pass the crystal around across the way here. And you guys can look at the liquid. Not yet, I'm going to say something about it first. This is an ideal model of a bit of a liquid. An instantaneous snapshot. And if you look at this, you will find that, again, it's fully tetrahedral. But, apart, as against that, which is all six-fold rings, this has got a mixture of ring structures. Four, fives, sixes, and sevens. And you'll see there's no crystallinity about it at all. So if you go away with that as a first-order model of what the molecules look like in the liquid, again, you'll see it's consistent with this tetrahedral building block that we've said is the preferred interaction for water, but it's actually disordered. This is a two-dimensional analog. If you look on the left, I'm saying that's two-dimensional ice. You can see it's oxygen, hydrogen, etc., etc. And on the right-hand side, that's a two-dimensional analog of water. Again, you can see it's a mixture of ring structures, four fives, sixes, sevens. Okay? So there I've built in... I've just built this system up, so it isn't a crystal. And if I do the sums on this, I can find that I can build this sort of model to be consistent with the density that water is in reality. Now, of course, we play other games with this. We don't spend all our life with models because we've got other things we can do now. We can measure this. We can measure the structures. We can determine the structures and show that is basically a correct model. And this is just some reconstructions we've done from some of the neutron scattering data on liquid water. And I'm just taking this in to... You can see the kind of structure here we've got. I can go right up into it, and I can look at a bit of it, and I can see what sort of structures I get. I get dominating this four-fold coordination, so I'm getting some defects, there's some threefold interactions. There's significant bending of the bonds, as I'd expect, as I'm raising the temperature up. And I'm also getting a mixture of ring structures. So consistent with this kind of simple model that I've put forward there. So in summary, this simple model of liquid, it's no regular order. The first neighbour environment on average is tetrahedral. The way the water molecules like to interact, and they're maintaining that kind of local interaction in the liquid. But there's distortions, there's deviations, as you would expect there to be. Okay. Good. Right. Water's supposed to be anomalous in some of its properties. And it is, depending upon how you define anomalous. As you all know, solids are denser than liquids. Okay? If you put a crystal on its own liquid, it sinks. And this is an example of a crystal which sinks, like 99% of all crystals do. That's actually tertiary butanol, which it behaves as normal liquid. If I take water, well, you all know very well, I'll take ice. Thank you, Rachel, for the ice. It floats. And it's a damn good job it floats. because otherwise we'd have even more climate problems than we have. It's unusual in that the crystal is less dense than the liquid by about 10%, and so it floats. So in the cold weather, the lakes freeze from the top downwards, which is quite useful for the fish, because if it froze from the bottom upwards, then you'd freeze your fish out. As you freeze the ice, the water ice becomes a good insulator. There's no sort of thermal movements of the molecules, and so slows down the freezing process. So ice is less dense than water. Why? Because of the molecule, I'll show you in a minute. But there's also this other interesting thing, in that if I take ice, this is a plot of volume against temperature. So here's ice, I heat up ice at minus 40 degrees, and it expands. That's any solid you expect will expand as you heat it. Comes to the melting point, and it shrinks. You get the liquid is more dense than the crystal. If I then continue to cool, then strangely, if I continue to heat it, then it contracts. Cold water expands on cooling. Cold water contracts on heat. Okay, until I get to this point here, about 4 degrees C, the so-called temperature mass and density. Now this is unusual, because if I heat a solid, I would always expect it to expand, because thermal motions move molecules further apart on average when the thing expands. In the case of water, in that region here, it contracts. And there are other properties here: heat capacity, diffusivity increasing with increasing density. They're all related to this particular kind of behaviour. So if I can explain this, then I can explain these other properties.
What's the vertical scale on that graph? Is that density?
I'm sorry, this is volume. That's volume, okay? So the volume goes down as I melt it. Okay. So the density increases as I melt. That's right, that's my signal too. But if I look at this simple model of two-dimensional water, there's an impression, and I'm only going to give the impression, that once I've loosened up, I've taken away the crystalline constraint on the ice, and so this is enabling the water to start forming some smaller rings. And it's quite happy with these smaller rings, because that's the pentagon. And the angle between those two is essentially the pentagon, is 180 degrees, which is quite close to the 105 degrees angle that the HOH is in water. So it's a very, very comfortable structure. And you can actually get smaller rings than that, not too difficult to go to 1995 degrees. So once I've removed that crystalline constraint, then the system can condense into a slightly smaller volume. Hence, liquid water is denser than ordinary ice. And the other anomaly on this cold water expanding on cooling, there are two effects here to take account of. The normal thermal expansion is that when I heat something up, then the atoms vibrate more, it's an asymmetric potential, so the molecules on average move further apart and the thing expands. The railway lines expand in hot weather and occasionally they buckle. Fighting against that, we have another process, which is the angles between these bond angles here. And as I heat it up, those bonds become more and more flexible. And as they become more flexible, smaller rings can form, and so it enables a volume contraction to take place. So I've got two effects. One is making this system expand, and the other is doing something which tends to make it contract. So I've got these two effects fighting each other, And the resolution of that fighting depends upon the temperature at. At the low temperatures, then the bond bending effects dominate, and so I get this anomalous behaviour. And above this temperature, then the normal thermal expansion effects are dominating, and I get the material behaving quite normally. So as I think I said in that previous slide, the key again is the fact that I'm dealing with a molecule which interacts with other molecules in this kind of space-expensive tetrahedral way. And I'm coming to the end of my 25 minutes. So I'll summarise. The anomalies arise from the underlying tetrahedral geometry, and they're not alone. There are other systems which have this sort of geometry, and they behave similarly. Silica, ordinary glass, behaves in similar kinds of ways. It has a temperature maximum density, and it has a liquid which is denser than some of the crystals. So there's really no mystery. It just so happens that water has this particular kind of interaction geometry which gives it these properties. So I'll finish there, because you need another drink, and I need one of these.
Thank you very much. We will take a short break. If anyone needs to loo, there are both somewhere out in the passage, also somewhere behind here as well. And we'll get the help of bring around what we have left in the way of food, help us solve what we have left in the way of drink. And you're welcome to ask you to do it.
You may wish to play with some water molecules.
Take some of that water wine cordial with you as well.
And take what?
Some wine and chunks, like wine. So we get some of that. And
you can prove me wrong.
I'm
So it's all melted now?
I know.
It's too hot in here.
Hot.
I have to put it out in the car to freeze it again.
Oh dear. Come on, you bugger.
My saucing with the beakers, by the way.
I think you're amazing. I would never have thought of that. Very good. You chose that up for me and pop it down below.
I'm thinking of maybe someone else doing the same thing.
Yep. Did you want to have?
Not being lazy, I just think it'd be a good idea to train people.
Yep. Take your pick. We had Sam doing the, you might have seen this, we had Sam doing the other. Now that worked really well, they said it was fine.
Cool.
Once I went and pulled it closer, you could just stand right in the corner there, and you could see both and use it, so it's fine. We'll leave, why don't we leave them on that, because I think John may want to show more slides. You just never know, you may want to go back to a picture.
Right, that's cool. So we're leaving.
But you could do it if you want to. It's in the right place now. So if you want Sam to go around the mic or you want another voice.
Yeah, if I take out the other slides.
Well, you work out who and tell them what you want to do. And I'll do this side.
Thank you. I'm going to